Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
HSC physics sample paper for final year physics. Now, if you're overseas, you say, look, I perhaps won't listen to it. So just give me a general, I'll just give you a general outline. So in Australia, there's been a dwindling number of people picking up physics in final year. I think it's down under 10,000. It was roughly 30,000, 20, 15 years ago. So it's been reducing all the time, despite a hell of a lot more money, resources, population. It's actually just been dwindling year on year. So it's just one of those things which isn't popular. And about 2 years ago, it's the course changed, instead of having an option which you study, there's an internal research project which gets marked. And so this HSC exam is now, instead of being three parts of the multiple choice, long answers, and the option, it's now just multiple choice and a bit of more extended option in that time. So they're probably a bit more deeply when they come across here. And I'm going to read this through. Now, I've gone through this once before, and fortunately for you guys, I've lost my tape recorder. And this is the fires and all that type of stuff. I missed a little bit going through it. Yeah, look, indeed, there are a few errors, some actual significant errors in this paper, which, if I can sort of say, sort of indicate not all as well. And it's sort of reading, you know, what do these errors mean? And it sort of goes back to an Australian patrol in Vietnam. I don't know, I keep on going back to war stories, but in this one, they were going through and the people were just preparing food, you know, inter-village preparing food, and someone noted, hey, there's just too much rice in that pot for that number of people. I realised that they were preparing food for a much larger number of people, that type of stuff. There's maybe, I don't know, you go into, say, a military unit and people haven't got their shoes cleaned, or they're a bit disheveled, and they're a bit cocky. You know, it's a bit, it's sort of the order in physics, or the order in a military thing doesn't live there. It's hard to describe what it is. Okay, so we're just going to, there's 20 marks and 80 marks, the first section, and here they're only going to have 7 questions to look at, and I'm going to read it through to you. And so it's just going to be the multiple choice question, and we'll go through the answers with you. And bear in mind that I've been out of physics for a little while, but I'll read question 1 of multiple choice. After DC voltage was applied to an apparatus containing hydrogen gas, the hydrogen separated into streams of oppositely charged particles. What could be concluded from this observation? There are 4 choices. A. Hydrogen gas conducts electricity. B. Hydrogen is the simplest element. C. Hydrogen atoms have components. D. Hydrogen atoms have a neutral charge. And the answer to that is that hydrogen atoms have components. Although its hydrogen gas does conduct electricity, it's they should perhaps say after the voltage is raised to a particular point, this happened. That might be a bit better. Next below, question 2 is a 5-gram sample of radioactive strontium decayed over time. The graph shows the mass of strontium 90 remaining at the initial sample as a function of time. And the approximate decay constant per year for strontium is these various amounts, and they show mass remaining in grams and time in years, and you can see its half life of strontium according to this is roughly 30 years. one on 30, or one on 25, something like that. So one on 30, so it says, what is the decay constant in e to the minus 1 of strontium minus 90? So your decay constant will be, say, 30 years, 1 on 30. The closest number to 1 on 30 is, for this year, you've got A in sequences down here, 0.06, 0.11, 0.14, 0.25. Just giving you a clue to people doing HSC exams. In general, although they haven't obeyed this for question 1, the sentences go from shortest to longest option, or if they're people, alphabetical order, or if they're numbers, in from low to high. It's a general rule, so you're not clued here. Okay, what is the magnitude of the momentum of an electron travelling at 0.8c? Now, the thing is that you have mass dilation, so 0.8c, you just remember there's a certain number of crossover numbers, which is roughly 70 to 70. So 70% of the speed of light is 1 on 70, or if it's clock slows down by 70%, it's roughly root 2. And then you've got 0.8 and 0.6. So it's 1 on 0.6 times the mass of the electron times the speed of light. We'll give it to you. And there's a series of answers here. I'm not going to go through it here. But it's 3.64 by 10 to the minus 22. So there's a sheet there. Again, it's not too interesting. That's question 3. Question number 4. Bear in mind, this is going to be relatively quick. Anna and Bo carried out independent experiments to investigate Malleus' law. They graphed the result of their experiments. The graphs are shown below. Now, the Malleus's law, I didn't know off the top of my head, is the amount of light transmitted by a polarizer. So as you change the angle of the polarizer, you get a different amount of light, and it's to do with the square. I think it's basically the intensity, the electric field vector is dropped, the intensity is the square, so you get the square of the angle in there. So what it means is that it hangs around 1 for a while, and then it drops really quickly, and it's sort of a cop down, and then it drops. So polarizers, most angular sensitive, around 50% polarization. I know this from building circuits or optical circuits with it, but the least sensitive around 0 degrees. Around 0 and 90 degrees to the polarization. So what that meant, say, in the robots I used to build, is that you'd get the polarizer and it would be most sensitive to angle at 45 degrees, and then you would rotate it quite cleanly and quickly from, you'd subtract 45 degrees, so you could get the 50% to really high accuracy, and then get the complete polarization to high accuracy. Pretty interesting to see that done. Okay, so Anna's graph, there's clearly more points on it, and it curves down. She's taken a much smaller range, so she's looked at the general curvature of it, whereas graph, again, there's something a little bit skew-whiff about it, in terms of it should be symmetric. The law should be symmetric. So there's something a little bit wrong. There's a data point probably out there. Okay, and it's overall the scientists. So Bo's graph is between 0 and, I believe, 80 degrees reading here, whereas Anna's graph is between 0 and 12 degrees. So Anna sees this plotting at very much 1 and sees the effect, a small 0.99 squared. So it's 1 minus x all squared. You put it out there, you get a parabolic if you do a Taylor series expansion. But it says, based on the two graphs, which is the following is correct? Anna has taken more measurements than Bo, but Bo has used a better data range. Well, again, for what she's saying, that's probably correct. B, Bo's graph is more precise as the angles in Anna's graph are too small. So that's precise, it makes sense. Anna's graph is more valid as Bo's graph shows a straight line relationship. Anna's graph is more valid as Bo's graph shows a straight line relationship. Okay, well, there you go. Anna's measurements are more reliable than Bo's as the line of best fit cannot be drawn in Bo's graph. Anna's measurements are more reliable than Bo's as a line of best fit cannot be drawn for Bo's graph. Also, if you did draw a line of best fit, you'd be put off, and it's not reliability. So the answer there is Anna has taken more measurements. Sorry for it being a bit of a letdown for you all. That's the first thing. Now, here's the next question. Now, this actually is, they've made a mistake in here, according to the way that I calculate it. Okay. So a 15-gram metal ball bearing on a string is swung around a pole in a circular circle of radius 0.8 meters. The plane of circular path is horizontal. Obviously, the angular velocity of the motion is 4 pi radians per second. Again, that's perhaps the way they've written that is not corresponding to modern writing. They've got rad space seconds. It should be rad full stop or midpoint seconds to minus one. They just don't do it there. I don't know why they do it. So the centripetal force is mass times 4 pi squared, omega squared r. So mass by 0.8 there. So what do we do? 0.8 0.8 by 1.5 is 0.12, so it's 0.12, just those two things. And now 4 pi squared is 16, pi squared is 10 160. By 0.12, it's a bit over, or 160 by 0.1 is 16, and that's much higher than all the other. 0.2 of 16 is 0.2 of 10 is about 0.3. Just going through that again, it's probably 18 newtons. And the maximum they have there is 0.7, 1.9, 2.4, 3 newtons. I just don't think they've got that correct. Yeah. Okay, the next question. So that's a mistake. Mistake made. And this, I suppose, really speaks to the overall problem that we have here of, what does this mean strategically if they make mistakes? A satellite is orbiting a planet of fixed altitude. Which row in the table correctly identifies the magnitude of work done by the forces on the satellite and the reason for it being the case? So, because the satellite will then go back to the same point with the same speed, no work has been done, so the work has to be zero, then it's force times distance. This distance, work is force dot distance. That's a dot, it's not times. And so therefore, it's the fact that the angle of the force. Now we just read through, and the answer is the first one. Okay. Oh, right. The first one is zero. The net force on the satellite is zero. Well, the satellite is accelerating in our frame of reference. As far as the satellite, if you're there towards it and you Einstein's general relativity, yes, it is zero. Net force is zero. However, in non-general relativity terms, it's got a net force that's accelerating. B, gravity acts zero, gravity acts at 90 degrees to the direction of the motion of the satellite, which is... the first part of a reason, and therefore, sort of like, why are you late? The car didn't go at extremely high speed, and I didn't leave in sufficient time. You sort of need a bit more of an explanation here. Question seven, here they show four graphs. An experiment was carried out to investigate the change in torque of a DC motor with a radial magnetic field. An experiment was carried out to investigate the change in torque for a DC motor with a radial... with a radial magnetic field. Okay, so it's a little bit... it will be the change in force as a function of... You really should... It's poorly expressed. The data is from startup to operating speeds were graphed. Well, the problem here is that... an experiment is normally to investigate the change in torque as a function of operating speed, would be the better way of putting it. So you've got three graphs here, and the last graph, I'm not going to describe the graphs for it, the last graph, the torque drops to zero. The torque of the DC motor drops to zero when it reaches speed, because you've got a back EMF acting as a generator. So that's page 6, page 7. You've got spaces provided to do it. Okay, and here we have another bizarro thing I've never seen. Okay, let's see. I've got to read it to you because it's just, it's crazy, it's crazy. For 6 marks, so it's a fair amount of work, 6 marks. It's probably a quarter of an hour's work. I don't know, we double it at least. Yes, honey? Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.